And the next verse is paying homage to the spiritual masters, where he says, by relying on the feet of the great masters, I will be able to put an end to the downfalls of the samsara and nirvana. And it is these spiritual masters who give the teaching with the great compassion. One of the source of the main source of the tantric explanation here is Patuan Thamchi Chemba, who has composed a general explanation on the tantra, and in fact three versions of explanation of general tantra. And then there is also a text called by Thakwa Jungne, in the beginning he speaks about the four Buddhist Buddhist schools of thought, a brief explanation of the four Buddhist schools of thought, and then the distinctions between the four classes of tantra, and the title of their text called Ngonto Jenshin, the Tree of Realization. And then in the Longchen's Zhudu or Seven Treasure, it explains all the stages of the path, right from the viewpoints of the non-Buddhist schools of thought to the highest tantric teaching on Adi Yoga. So it is definite that there will be many texts like this, even though I do not know all of them. So there were many great texts composed by great scholar, Tibetan scholars before the coming of Tsongkhapa. So Tsongkhapa had obviously seen all these texts and treated them as the main source. However, Tsongkhapa refuted some of the viewpoints of Patuan Rinpoche, and Tsongkhapa also had made some refutations against the composition of Thakpa Gyaltsen. So here again you will see Tsongkhapa adopted the procedure and the tradition of Nalanda scholars, which is to scrutinize everything through one's own reflection, study and experience. As you have read, the title of this text is called clarifying or opening the essential points of the secret stages of the great Vajradhara. So there are different ways of using a title. Sometimes the title is related to what is being explained in the text. So it is related to the contents or subject matter of the text. For example, they would use a text like Madhyamika Mulakarika. For example, in the case of Nagarjuna's fundamental wisdom, it is called Mula Madhyamika Karika. So it could relate to the content, and because in that text Nagarjuna explains primarily the viewpoint of Madhyamika. And then there are other texts like Buddha Palita. So Buddha Palita actually is the name of the author himself. So sometimes the author uses his own name as the title of their text. So in the case of this text, Ngaram Chemo, he has given this name, clarifying the essential point of the secret stages of the path, because Tsongkhapa is going to explain the four classes of tantra. And this is called clarifying the essential point of all the secrets. So that means it relates to conferring the initiation, the actual liberating path, the commitments and pledges. So since he's talking about all these points, he's saying that this is a text that clarifies all the essential points of the secret stages of the path. Then the meaning of the term great Vajradhara, of course it basically refers to Buddha Shakyamuni, but when we talk about Buddha Shakyamuni, we I think explain explaining it from the point of view of supreme emanation body. So Buddha appears in the form of a fully ordained bhikshu, Vinaya holder, one without desire. Then when we talk about great Vajradhara, he appears in the form of a deity, which signifies employing the desire on the path, or attachment on the path. So that is the reflection of the Rupakaya, or form body. I think that is more related to the enjoyment body of the Buddha. And that's why here Tsongkhapa uses the word all-pervading. And of course Buddha Shakyamuni is also all-pervading, but normally we do not use the title all-pervading in the sutric sense. For example, we do not use the title like all-pervading Buddha Shakyamuni. We do not say that. But when it refers to the Vajradhara, we use the term like all-pervading Vajradhara. And then with respect to the use of the term conqueror, we use this word both with the Vajradhara and also with respect to Buddha Shakyamuni. So when we talk about Buddha Shakyamuni, he is the emanation body of the enjoyment body. And when we talk about the great Vajradhara, he is the enjoyment body, which is the source of all other emanations. He pervades to all other emanations. And therefore, I feel that the term all-pervading is being used. And he is called conqueror because he is someone who is fully controlled and conquered over all the subtle and gross for evil forces. So that's the meaning of conqueror, all-pervading great Vajradhara. Saying that the word all-pervading is not found in the Chinese translation, in the Taiwanese translation. Vajradhara, the holder of Vajra, is this has been explained on four levels in Guha Samaja. The first explanation is related to the explanation of the word. So the meaning in that sense is that one who holds actual Vajra is called holder of the Vajra. And the second meaning is indivisible, refers to indivisible or indivisibility of method and wisdom. So Vajra refers to indivisibility of method and wisdom. And then the hidden meaning of Vajradhara is as explained in the highest Yoga Tantra or Anuttara Yoga Tantra. So this is more related to the explanation found in the completion stage. And of course within the hidden meaning there are different levels of hidden meaning. So this primarily refers to the illusory body. More on the impure illusory body. And the ultimate meaning is that this refers to the ultimate state of the clear light and the ultimate meaning of union. So therefore the word Vajradhara has several layers of meaning. Term and the word itself, its general meaning, and its hidden meaning, and its ultimate meaning. Who has translated this Chinese version of the great stages of the tantric path into Chinese? Pa Tsun. And then I see a note here on my text. learned bodhisattva who possesses wisdom and also possesses the powers in the sense of skillful methods. So this position of learnedness is in the sense of having developed view of emptiness, and then possessing the force refers to the sense of development of compassion. So one who has developed such a powerful realization, such bodhisattvas cannot be controlled by the four evil forces. Of course, still not being a Buddha, one has not control, one cannot control and vanquish the four evil forces. But however, one will not be controlled by the four evil forces because of having the four causes. That means having view of emptiness, and secondly possessing bodhicitta, and thirdly acting in accordance to what one teaches to others. So that means a genuine bodhisattva. In the case of a false one, he would say something and will practice another. So such a bodhisattva possesses a sincere, reliable sense of responsibility, and so because of one's having developed compassion and bodhicitta assisted by wisdom, so such a person definitely automatically obtains the blessing of the Buddha. So view of emptiness, bodhicitta, acting in accordance to what one preaches, and then because of being having the blessing of the Buddhas. So by possessing these four causes, four qualities, these bodhisattvas cannot be harmed or interrupted or controlled by the four evil forces. So receiving the blessing from the Buddha, now in order to receive such a blessing, first of all, as a practitioner, one should oneself first develop view of emptiness and develop bodhicitta and lead a sincere life. That means acting in accordance with what one says and what one talks about. So these are wonderful advices that we must adopt. Of course, we have this habit of visiting temples and requesting for their blessings, but in order to receive these blessings, first of all, you should prepare yourself, prepare the ground for receiving those blessings. So that once you make your mind fertile, then you can receive the blessings. In order to make oneself become someone, not someone that cannot be easily controlled by evil forces, by developing bodhicitta and so forth, this also clearly says that if you really want to get rid of these harms from the evil forces, what is really important is to first of all refine one's mind. It is not the evil forces outside, but the forces of afflictive emotions that is residing within our mind constantly. And it is because of these afflictive emotions residing within that externally we see them in the form of human beings and non-human beings as harming sentient beings. So therefore, in order to gain control over the four evil forces, what is really relevant and important is to develop those realizations and inner qualities which we have not developed, and to further strengthen those qualities which we have already developed. So here you can see what a wonderful advice and instruction. And the next line from the text is paying refuge to the lamas. So Lama here refers to primarily to Chunglepa. So he refers to all those lamas from whom he received sutric teachings and particularly tantric teachings. And he also calls Manjushri, who was not only a special deity, but he was someone who had actually directly appeared before him, and he was able to discuss with him important teachings, receive important teachings, just like another human being to another human being. So it is in this way that Tsongkhapa was able to clarify many difficult tantric points because of the guidance of Manjushri. So therefore he pays homage to Manjushri as well while paying homage to all the lamas. Another thing that I want to say is that you might here ask a question by saying that when we talk about Manjushri directly appearing before Tsongkhapa, is this not another story like saying that the King Sungsingkambo on his head has the head of Amitabha? I'm 100% sure that this is not the case. My reason is that among some of my religious practitioners and friends, some of them had actually got vision and received teachings from their lineage lamas, and they have no reason to tell lie to me. For example, Taglong Shabdung Rinpoche, the late Taglong Shabdung Rinpoche. Of course, many of you have heard about it. So Taglong Shabdung Rinpoche, the late Taglong Shabdung Rinpoche, remained in Chinese prison for a long time. In the very beginning of his life, he led a very elaborate, luxurious way of life. In the latter part of his life, he spent many years in Chinese prison. And then later, he was able to escape to India. And he was a very elderly Lama who is really based on his own experience of upheavals of life, has really not much concern about the ups and downs of life. So he told me that once when he was giving some empowerments to the late Thelungu Chenzo Rinpoche, he was able to directly see all the lineage lamas on the walls. So I have some other stories of such experiences that were told to me by some of my other spiritual friends. Then take the case of the Dalai Lama Longdok Gyatso. Even when he was around, I think, 10, just a child, and even at that childhood, he was someone who used to get very special visions of Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, and so forth. Similarly, if you read the story of the second Dalai Lama, Gendun Gyatso, he also had similar experience. And then in the case of Tsongkhapa himself, when he was once undertaking the retreat of Manjushri, as you will find in the secret biography of Tsongkhapa, he saw blue light, and from there he got a clear, direct vision of Manjushri. And from that time onwards, whenever he wanted to see Manjushri, Manjushri appeared before him, and thus he was able to remove all his doubts about important teachings. Similarly, the fifth Dalai Lama also had many pure visions, and based on what appeared to his pure vision, he had written down actually many of his experiences related to the appearance of pure visions, which even to this day we can read and practice. So therefore, It is probably true to say that some of these Nalanda traditions related to the tantric teaching is based on the experience of pure vision. And of course some of these teachings were based on the actual teaching of Buddha when Buddha appeared in the form of supremely emanated body. And now here again we can ask a question by saying that when Tsongkhapa found difficulties about certain Madhyamika viewpoints, at that point it is more relevant that Nagarjuna should appear rather than Manjushri. Why is it that Manjushri appears to the pure vision? And then of course why not Buddha himself, because he is the original teacher, so that you can settle the points clearly from the original teacher. So therefore why Manjushri? So here at the level of appearance in the pure vision, there could be different appearances. One in the form of a human being, and another. So Manjushri himself is actually not a human being. He is one of the manifestation of Buddha himself in the form of a deity in the mandala. And then there is also another emanation, like the supreme emanation body of the Buddha himself, whose bone relics still we can see. So from the point of view of the historical Buddha, he is born as a human being in the life of human being. However, on the level of pure vision, you can see Buddha, you can see Nagarjuna and so forth. But however, there should be a specific purpose, I think, of emanating in the form of a deity, in the mandala deity. So therefore, if you particularly relate to such a special deity, which is an emanation of the member of the mandala deity, I think there is a specific purpose to fulfill. Apart from such an explanation, we cannot say why Tsongkhapa could not clarify his doubts with Buddha or Nagarjuna, and why with Manjushri. Then also, even though the different emanations of the Buddha have same level of realization and quantity, but however, since he appeared, his wisdom appeared in the form of Manjushri, so therefore there is a special relevance. Next verse is paying homage to the great spiritual masters, where Tsongkhapa primarily refers to the root and lineage lamas. So this verse says that by relying on the feet of such sublime spiritual masters, as we normally study in the stages of the path, that they are kind to us, for blessing and transforming our mind, for giving us the teaching. And out of many acts of kindness, the most important obviously is the kindness of teaching. And it's because of their teaching that one is able to destroy the downfalls of samsara and nirvana. And the main teaching is the teaching on bodhicitta, and the development of renunciation is a prerequisite for training in the mind of compassion. When we talk about renunciation, it literally means to develop a wish to definitely emerge out from samsara. So such a kind of renunciation is developed based on a motivation to remove the afflictive emotions. And this is possible by primarily understanding the destructive nature of sufferings, particularly the conditioned suffering. And the main source of suffering are afflictive emotions. So therefore, when one develops a wish to remove afflictive emotions by seeing them as the source of suffering, then it is through this way that, based on the realization of one's own experience of suffering and afflictive emotions, one is able to develop renunciation. So therefore, it acts as a root for development of loving kindness and compassion, which are the root of development of bodhicitta. Both in one's case and in the case of other sentient beings, we are same, having the capacity to remove suffering and to remove afflictive emotions. And in order to develop the direct counterforce to remove afflictive emotions, we need to develop the view of emptiness. And so therefore, here when we talk about stainless path that destroys the downfalls of samsara and the solitary nirvana, the main path here refers to bodhicitta, and likewise all other aspects of the path. So it is the kindness of spiritual master who gives us such teaching on removing the faults of samsara and faults of solitary nirvana. Next verse is seeking the blessing of the protector of the will. So this is paying homage to Vajradhara, who appearing in the form of Vajradhara employs the path of desire and attachment, who is the creator of multifarious forms of various aspects of deities. And when you request that I may be sustained by such a Vajradhara, you are invoking his compassion. Now if you ask what is the quality of this Vajradhara, this is explained in this verse, where it says, just like the appearance of rainbow color in a clear sky, for example, on a clear sky we can see the beautiful attractive rainbow color. So just like this, as an example, in the case of the meaning, we can also think about a state of peace, tranquility, which is totally free from elaborations. And that state of free from elaboration is like the clear sky, clear space. And it is from that state of peace, without being fluctuated by any motivation, simply through the force of past accumulation of merit and prayers, that one is spontaneously and effortlessly able to manifest oneself into the form of rupakaya or form body. And so that is the so therefore the protector of the will here refers to that Vajradhara, who is the source of all emanations. So So that state which is pure and free from all elaboration refers to the Dharmakaya, and it's from that Dharmakaya that the enjoyment body arises. And it's from this primordial enjoyment body of the Buddha that all other aspects of Buddha's form, in pure form and also in impure form, arises. And it also arises in the form of host of deities. And here when we talk about host of deities, it could, it is not necessary to refer to only those deities which are not Buddhas. It could also include the Buddha himself. So it is in this way that countless aspects of deities arise, and it is in this way the purposes of sentient beings are fulfilled. So therefore the cause is really the Dharmakaya, which is free from all elaborations, and then without any motivation, just like the arisal of the rainbow, different emanations of the form body arises in the form of enjoyment body, and then the enjoyment body is able to express itself in countless forms of Buddha until to the end of the universe or samsara for the benefit of sentient beings. So you are therefore invoking the compassion of such Buddha. This verse explains the meaning of the Buddha, which is seen as the embodiment of the four kayas, four bodies of the Buddha. The countless host of deities and emanations refers, of course, it could refer to enjoyment body, but it primarily refers to emanation bodies of the Buddha. And these two form bodies, the emanation body and enjoyment body, both of them their nature is such that they are not like us with flesh and bones, but they are in the nature of light. And from the sutric point of view, they are product of wisdom beings. And in the tantric teaching, of course, it refers to the wisdom itself. So not fluctuating from the state of peace, free from elaboration, refers to the Dharmakaya. And the Dharmakaya here refers to the actual nature of the mind, which is free from defilements. And that state of the mind refers to the natural truth body, and the mind itself refers to the natural truth body, which is also a conditioned phenomena. So it has two qualities, the qualities of being naturally pure and also being pure from the mental defilements. So therefore this line refers to the Dharmakaya, which is of two types, natural truth body and a truth body which is free from temporary defilements. So it is in this way that this verse speaks about how Buddha possesses the four bodies. Now, as far as the meaning of a state which is free from all types of elaborations, this is a very complex subject. It could refer to free from the elaborations of object of negation. In that case, the object of negation does not exist at all. The elaboration also refers to true existence, perception of true existence, which is existent and which is cognized by a misconceived mind. And it could also refer to a wrong conception. When we talk about emptiness, we are talking about the reality, talking about suchness. And when we talk about suchness of what? When we talk about the actual mode of existence, whose actual mode of existence? So in that case, the object itself, which is the basis of that ultimate reality, is also called elaboration. So it is from that perspective we can talk about diverse experiences, diverse aspects, oneness of something, diversity of something. So it is in this way we can see all these diverse elaborations, the multiplicity as multiple aspect of a conventional phenomena. But in the perspective of emptiness, there is no such elaboration, there is no such expression of multiplicity. There is only oneness. So it is in this way that the word elaboration could be understood in different contexts. But here when we talk about the state which is totally free from all elaborations, it definitely refers to being free from the elaborations of true grasping, and bodhisattvas on the pure land, pure ground, are free from such elaborations. But here when we talk about being free from all types of elaborations, as we have explained earlier, this primarily refers to Dharmakaya, and Dharmakaya is such a state, ultimate state. For example, when we talk about the natural truth body, then it refers to the ultimate nature of the mind. And when this ultimate nature of the mind, the emptiness, is seen by wisdom mind, then in the perspective of this wisdom mind, seeing the ultimate reality, the elaboration of conventional phenomena do not exist. Even though there is conventional phenomena, but now, for example, particularly this is complex in the perspective when we see it from the point of view of an omniscient mind of the Buddha. Because Buddha's mind is omniscient, it definitely sees all conventional phenomena as well as ultimate reality like emptiness. But still we can talk about being free from all type of elaborations in the sense that when an omniscient mind of the Buddha sees the ultimate reality, then in the perspective of seeing the ultimate reality, it does not see the conventional phenomena, even though the omniscient mind sees the conventional object. So that is the meaning of being free from all elaborations. So there is a subtle distinction you can see here. On the one hand, you can talk about an omniscient mind of Buddha seeing all phenomena, whether it's conventional truth or ultimate truth. But in the perspective of seeing the ultimate reality, it does not see the conventional phenomena. So that is the meaning of being free from all types of elaborations. When you refer the word elaboration to conventional realities. And similarly, we can say that in the perspective of seeing the object of the ultimate reality or basis of the ultimate reality, it sees the conventional phenomena as well as the ultimate phenomena. So therefore, the Buddha's mind sees the true truth at the same time. verse is paying homage to the protector of the power, which refers to Vajrapani. And by paying homage to Vajrapani, Tsongkhapa is also kind of threatening the evil forces by saying, since now I have paid homage to Vajrapani, you be careful. So he's trying to threaten the evil forces. So in this verse, Tsongkhapa is saying that the countless secret teachings taught by the Vajradhara, the protector of the will, all these secret teachings that is taught by Vajradhara are later collected by the holder of the mantra, which refers to Vajrapani. So Tsongkhapa pays homage to such a Vajrapani and then kind of threatens the evil forces. The Vajradhara has taught countless secret teachings that is relevant to the countless mental dispositions of his followers. All these secret teachings are collected or gathered by the Lord of the holder of the mantra. So that refers to Vajrapani, who is the emanation of the sublime activities of all the Buddhas, and I pay homage to you. So therefore it is now proper for the evil forces to restrain their activities. And here when we talk about evil forces, it refers to the evil force of afflictive emotions, evil force of psychophysical aggregate, evil force of death, and evil force of the Devaputra. The afflictive emotions as evil forces produces all other types of evil experiences. Like a negative psychophysical aggregate, and as a result of that finally we encounter death. And what contributes to further development and strengthening of such afflictive emotions are called the evil force of the Son of God or Devaputra. So that is from the point of view of afflictive emotions. Then from the point of view of obscuration to enlightenment, it refers to the dualistic appearances. Such kind of dualistic appearances becomes an obstruction for simultaneously understanding the conventional truth and ultimate truth. And it is also in this way that it acts as an evil force. So it is from that point of view, it also is a kind of afflictive emotion. The actual meaning of afflictive emotion, at least from the point of view of the Tibetan word nyomong, means disturbing emotion which when arises within our mind makes us weak. And then there is also a death from the perspective of obscuration to enlightenment. The others I don't know. So simply I will say I don't know. So anyway, there are four evil forces from point of view of afflictive emotions and four evil forces from the point of view of obscuration to enlightenment. Perhaps even in the case of bodhisattvas who are on the pure ground and who have started removing obscuration to enlightenment, they may also have certain factors which leads to mental destruction. So I think this could also be counted as the evil force of the Devaputra or the child of the god. Then the next few verses refers to Manjushri, where Tsongkhapa says that I have heard that Manjushri, the sole father of all the Buddhas, when he is pleased, then merely through a glance of his eye, bestows the supreme intelligence of realizing the profound thought of the Buddha, and therefore for a long time, continuously I have relied upon you as my special deity. And the reason is that you are the only father of all the Buddhas. As is said in this verse, in another verse, where it also says that Manjushri is, when as a bodhisattva, when he developed bodhicitta for the first time,
mm-hmm.